Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome everybody to the Film Vault. That's Anthony. I'm Brian Bishop, we're your host. For today,
hello.
Top five corrupt politicians.
Correct.
Is it Anderson category or listener?
No, listener Isaac. Oh. Listener Isaac.
Oh, it's one of the ones he sent over in a good batch of suggestions.
Yeah. Isaac did. One of which I said, no thanks. Thanks, but no thanks. He's also the guy that way back in the day suggested racist characters, which we had fun with.
That was a good one.
And more recently, he suggested the top five uses of the word. Wait, momentarily, we'll hear Brian's glee. Top five uses of the N-word.
Oh, we should
there
do
it is.
That.
There's the glee. There's the glee. There's the aforementioned glee. There's a predicted glee.
We haven't done that before.
Nor shall we. I feel like I don't know if we need trouble. You know what I mean?
It would be, it might be hard to, no, I guess we get, no.
Well, I mean, actually. Next week we're doing top five bitches, calling Wolf, crying Wolf, which what? Is going to get us in trouble.
We did? I don't remember citing that.
Top five bitches, crying Wolf. That's what we're going to get in trouble for next week.
Top five bitches that should have reported earlier.
No, and you know what? Today's topic, I think, a little timely because of all the things that are going on with the politics.
It's almost always timely, this one, but it feels especially
corruption
timely.
Of politics go like peanut butter and jelly, or PB&J.
Peanut butter and more peanut butter. They're just kind of inextricable. Inextricable.
Mm. Yeah, there's some out there that aren't. There's some.
Right, but corruption in politics is...
Did you have fun doing the research?
Part and parcel. I did. I ended up with a solid top five. Let me ask you this, because we talked ahead of time briefly over text, and as I was doing my research, and the list kept growing, because it turns out shady politicians, very well presented in film, very well represented in film.
Okay, I'm interested in hearing your list, because mine was kind of meh. Okay. I got a decent list, but honestly, we did research this week for two episodes. We are also doing the top five... iconic characters
this is facts, your idea.
Facts behind them. I love it. And I got to tell you, the research for the two episodes was very different. I did not enjoy the research for the corrupt politicians nearly as much as what we're doing for Patreon this month, which is iconic characters that everyone knows, but it's fun facts about those characters because very few people know, I think, myself included, until this week, about some of these characters. Mm. They're the kind of characters that, even if you've never seen the movie, you're familiar with the character.
Yeah, of course.
They're iconic.
Literally iconic.
And the facts behind where they came from, like who came up with the ideas for them, and the actors that are involved, and what other roles that they've played.
Any crossover?
I don't know.
How unlikely would that be?
I spent a week explaining what this concept was to Brian.
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it.
And it still bothers me that I actually had to give him one of my picks. I kept giving him picks that weren't mine.
I actually used that one, actually.
And then did you?
Yeah.
No, come on.
It's my number two, though.
Did you really?
It's my number five, so it totally undercuts.
Did you really use
my
pick?
No, of course not.
I'd be so upset.
Anderson.
All right, so that's a Patreon.
It's an also rant.
Let's get into
all of my top
week.
Five. I was going to say are not. They're all corrupt in the sense that they're all guilty of crimes. Now, sleazy politicians are one thing. Some of mine are sleazy in addition to that, but they're all corrupt in that they are all criminal activity. Some are in addition to that sleaze, but all are. I left just sleazy politicians off. I think that's its own list.
Okay, well, sometimes they are one and
the
same.
Right. Sometimes they are. And, number three for me is I have hard time parsing.
And you know, sometimes they're not even like necessarily politicians, but they work for the government, so maybe they're like spooks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, my number one is okay. That's interesting because my number one is not an elected official, but he is a government official, as though like a cabinet member, for example.
I might get some shit for one of my picks. All right. Before we get to it, let's go Philly. Let's go Boston. So Philly, I'm ditching my wife on my actual wedding anniversary to be in Philly for this show. I'm going to have two of my lead actors in attendance with us for the Q&A as well. And this is going to be a special one because we're doing an after party as well in the theater with food and booze and beer and wine.
Is
usually we go somewhere afterwards, which I'm still going to go somewhere afterwards. I'm thinking about taking a 6 a.m. flight out and just staying up the entire time. So I'll be there October 13th. It's Saturday. Tickets available on AndersonCowan.com. And then right after that, the following weekend, Boston. And that's going to be October 20th at an actual theater. Both of these are actual theaters.
Sweet.
And then finally bringing it home in Santa Ana. That's not until November. But tickets are kind of waning. I haven't sold many tickets the last few days. So let's go, people.
Talk about Boston and Philly specifically or Orange County as well?
I just have not been getting pings. And I'm looking. Also, T-shirts. Groupers
T-shirts. I will be in Orange County, so I will buy a ticket to that.
No, you can just go.
Okay.
Groupers T-shirts also available for pre-order. One more. Actually, no. As you're hearing this, it's over. or well, maybe well later done. Today will well be the done. Last day. I mean, the last few hours, if you're hearing this on the Friday that this is released at the $26 price, and then I'm placing the order. So
I think
that's enough business.
To it the first day.
Go over to AndersonCowan.com, C-O-W-A-N, and you can get all your stuff. I'm also making some noise about it on the old Twitter and Facebook. Facebook. All right, let's talk about movies we've seen this week.
We oftentimes, Anderson, will text each other during the week and kind of arrange movies to see at the same time.
We've not done that. We did not do that.
So I'm hoping we saw the same movie.
I doubt it.
Okay.
Really doubt it.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't see anything in theaters?
I saw something in theaters.
Okay, as did I.
Yeah.
I wanted very much to see two movies in theaters because Simple Favor is getting solid reviews.
Yeah.
It's been a couple weeks, though. I'm interested to see what Paul Feig does with a different genre. He's very entrenched in the comedic genre.
Yes, I've heard this one gets laughs, though.
Did not make it.
I will be seeing this probably for next week.
Okay. Let's commit.
Because there's not a lot coming out this coming week.
Let's commit. I did, in fact, see Fahrenheit 11.9.
I have not seen
it. Oh, I was hoping we could cross over on this.
I might go see that one with the wife. It's not really a real movie as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
It's propaganda. The man has exposed himself as a propagandist.
That is very interesting. So
propagandized.
The first thing I have written down, Fahrenheit 11.9 is a Michael Moore documentary. Of course, the title harkens back to Fahrenheit 9/11. And in fact, the first, it opens the exact same way. Remember how Fahrenheit 9/11, was it all just a dream? And it shows the victory.
I can't take his hacky humor either.
Well, I'll get to that. God, how much did I talk about this? I want to.
Go ahead.
It's in theaters now. So I guess I should talk about it.
Are people digging it?
So the first thing I've written down, which is funny because you alluded to it, I can see a lot of people prejudging their interest in this movie because they know who Michael Moore is and they know what it'll be and they know what his positions are. And of course, it's very critical of Donald Trump and conservatives in general.
Shocking.
It's a Michael Moore documentary after all, but it takes plenty of shots at Obama, plenty of shots at Bill and Hillary Clinton, plenty of shots at the Democratic Party. There's a lot less Trump than you'd imagine. A shockingly little amount of Trump in this. A lot of things to say. Number one, I really feel like, I rarely say this, this should have been a series. This should have been a Netflix 4-part series, should have been an Amazon 5-part.
HBO.
Something like that. There's so much he wants to cover here. My strong hunch is that he wanted very badly to make a movie
Poppin' Flicks
about the Flint water crisis, because you know, he's the Flint guy, he's from Flint, the whole Roger and Me.
Crackle. Yeah, he could have.
The movie spends more time on Flint than it does on Trump. There's a whole...
You see Where to Invade next?
No, one of the few ones I haven't seen.
The red herring of a title, and it's just him going to different countries that do things better than we do?
Yeah, I didn't...
A lot of hacky humor.
I didn't see. Spends a lot of time on the Flint water crisis, which is compelling, but it spends a lot of time on the West Virginia teachers, spends a lot of time on the Parkland school shooting, some time on Trump, but it's a lot of tangential stuff. There's a lot to cover here, and all of it is compelling to an extent, but it's a little unfocused. It's compelling.
Sounds like it's trying to cram a lot of ingredients into one pie.
It's a 2-hour and 5-minute movie, which is a lot for a documentary.
This is what's on my mind the last couple of years. Let's catch up.
It does feel like, I feel like people who are hypercritical of Donald Trump when I have conversations with them or when I encounter them in my life on social media or wherever, are so outraged by him and what's going on. They're scattered. They don't even know what to focus on. They're like, and then this, and then this, and the wall, and then the kids, and which is fine. All of those are individually very compelling, but the lack of focus is kind of indicative, I think, of people who are critical of Donald Trump, i.e. Michael Moore.
Yeah, like, you know, people talk about the smoking gun a lot, and it's more like a smoking shotgun with Trump. It's just like scatter.
Yeah, buckshot.
Like buckshot.
Yeah. And he even gets into there's a lot to cover here, and it's all good objectively, and he's a good filmmaker. There's some very Michael Moore stunts. I'm not going to reveal any of them for you, but he involving Flint water and
what's
involving
this running,
ambushing.
What's this running on the Rotten Tomatoes?
I think it's 8. I didn't write it down. Logan, what's a
high 80s, low 90s?
I'm thinking low 80s. I'm thinking 82,
really?
84. I saw it on Wikipedia.
I guess there are a lot of critics.
77.
Oh, 77. Lower than that.
See, I think that kind of tells you how many critics are Democrats? How many critics are, you know, red? Wear the red tie. Sorry, I'm joking.
It sounds weird, but for a film called 11/9 that's ostensibly about Donald Trump, there's not that much politics in here. There's a lot of social issues, like the crimes that were committed in Flint. He makes a very compelling case that they were in fact crimes. The teachers union going on strike in West Virginia, the Parkland shootings.
Right. Yes,
there's not a lot of like, you know, there's a little bit of Trump stuff.
Well, he did the same thing with Where to Invade Next, which was a red herring of a title because it wasn't about what you would think, which is like America just invading places and, you know, flipping governments and regimes. And it was completely about the positive side of that, which things, concepts and ideologies that we should take from various countries and make our own. He's just too himself.
If you don't actually like Michael Moore, which I think there's a large percentage of people who don't.
I didn't used to dislike him, but the more I saw, the more I learned.
A caricature of himself. He's become the Michael Moore character.
It's propaganda. He takes so many liberties with the truth, and that's my problem.
Yeah, I.
Do you remember the
I don't know about
sick,
that.
What?
Sicko.
Sicko one.
Yeah, I barely remember that.
Do you remember the end where he goes to
Cuba?
Take him
to Cuba or something?
Yeah, and he's like, I have sick people. And they're like, oh, we'll take you. We'll take you to our hospitals and we will cure you. And it was just so staged.
Those kind of stunts were pretty thin. Yeah, we're pretty thin pretty fast. And there's a couple of those in here.
It's insulting, Brad. It's insulting.
But for a 2-hour and 5-minute movie, which is too long, it really does lack a strong narrative drive. There is some good stuff, and overall this is, I'd say, an above average movie. I really do want you to see it so we can talk about it, because there are a few spoiler things to talk about, and like I said, a lot less actual politics than you would imagine, a lot considering what it is and who it's about and who it's by. A lot less.
All right.
Yeah, I wish I could talk more about
it. I'm glad
you
love it so much.
I didn't love it so much.
I'm glad that you
it's an above average movie.
Sucked it down full spoon.
No.
Hook, line, sinker.
I'd give it about an 80% would be the
Well, that's higher than the critics are giving it.
By 3 points. Mm. God, there was one moment that really...
Instead, Brian, I saw a movie.
What'd you say?
I saw a film. Film that I was a little bit excited about. Came out in limited this week. Don't know how much it's going to spread. It's called The Sisters Brothers.
I chose not to see it. It's only four theaters.
The Sisters Brothers.
Four theaters.
This is directed by Jacques Audiard, director of Rust and Bone and A Prophet. Both of those are very dense films.
This is his first English language film.
First English language film. Brian does not lie. This is also, the director of photography, the cinematographer of this one was Benoit Deby. Benoit Deby.
Is it Benoit or Benoit?
I think it's Benoit.
I don't know.
I will call it Benoit. I will call him Benoit. Benoit.
I shall call you Benoit.
Deby. He was a cinematographer for Spring Breakers, as well as Gaspar Noé's a trilogy of Irreversible, Enter the Void, and Love. So this man has seen some things.
Shot some things.
And he's got an eye, but it's very interesting because you don't think of, if you've seen A Prophet or if you've seen Rust and Bone, it's compelling. They're dense dramas, like I said. Not a lot of like joy or fun to be had in those two movies. And they're well shot, but they're not like Gaspar Noé equality. You know, you're not looking and going like you're remembering the visuals.
Yeah.
And this guy, I was kind of hoping for a there's not much. There's some beautiful images. So, okay, here's a story.
Sorry, it's a Western.
It's a Western. I haven't even gotten to the stars yet. It stars John C. Reilly, Joaquin Phoenix, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Riz Ahmed. Riz Ahmed is the only a non-household name there. Mm. I guess John C. Reilly is a household name, at least for film lovers at this point.
Yeah, let's say so.
Riz Ahmed, you would know him as he's in Rogue One. He also plays Ricky in Nightcrawler. And he plays Omar, the lead terrorist in Four Lions, a movie that Brian and I bring up.
Yes.
Plenty, numerous times on this show. He's the lead terrorist,
gotcha.
Lead buffoon. So...
Dumb characters.
Story is told, A story, B story, you know, intercut, which I always kind of like that when they do that with movies, and it's effective. You know, they do it seamlessly in sitcoms. So like Seinfeld will have three different stories going on a lot of the time. South Park, they always have it. And it happens in movies too, but not as often as a lot of the time it doesn't work as well. So it worked fairly well here. Also, this is the second collaboration of Jake Gyllenhaal and Riz Ahmed after Nightcrawler, because they're both in Nightcrawler.
Wow.
Not interested in that. Okay, A story is John C. Reilly and Joaquin Phoenix. They play brothers, and yes, indeed, their last name is Sisters. So therefore, they're the Sisters Brothers. Unnecessary. I think it was played for laughs at times. Also, don't be going into this one looking for laughs, and don't search too hard because you're gonna crane your neck. The theater that I saw it in was Brian's theater that he loves so much, pretentious fuckhead theater. people applauded at the end of this movie. Stop it. Sit on your fucking hands. This is not an applause worthy movie. Sit down. Stop it. I get angry. Angry. Place was packed.
You tell those people who you saw a few days ago.
There's like three empty seats in the theater. Oh, wow. People are packed. But you know, in the theaters where people are just reaching for laughter and you can just like, they're like trying to laugh.
Yes, I do.
That happened a number of times in this one. This is not a movie that with a lot of laughs. So,
speaking of which, Groupers are coming to Boston.
A lot of laughs there. A lot of laughs. Oh, you don't have to reach for the laughs there.
They're
just
coming
come
at you. They're falling really your lap.
Hey, honestly, if I was independent of Groupers and it lived in a vacuum and I saw it, I would laugh. I would laugh quite a bit.
Talking about an actual movie.
Would laugh quite a bit. It's my kind of humor. That's why. So there's some memorable things in this movie. So the brother sisters, they're bad characters. They're hired guns. They kill a lot, especially Joaquin's character. He's known as like, you know, no one wants to fuck with him. His reputation precedes him. John C. Reilly is set up as a much more caring individual with empathy, and he's in love with this woman who he's constantly alluding to and thinking of, which there's no payoff there. I don't know. I think about it. And then B story is you got Gyllenhaal and Riz Ahmed, who are on the other side, and it's a little bit of a convoluted story based on a novel. Gyllenhaal was supposed to be helping the sisters, brothers, and tracking this guy down, and then they were gonna all rendezvous, and he would have like this Riz Ahmed on a platter for him because Riz Ahmed has created this elixir that you put in the water. Started during the gold rush.
I saw the trailer.
1850, and it illuminates. It's said to illuminate the gold, and you know, making riches out of anyone who holds this elixir. And then ultimately, there's a bunch of themes here, and I was searching, like, going, is there something bigger going on here, and I'm missing it because I'm not bright enough to get it. And I don't think that was the case. The themes are American greed, compassion, ingenuity, opportunity, and. It's a Western, so you get the beautiful skylines and scapes and meadows and mountains. There's a couple images that I'll never forget. One involving a spider that goes inside someone's mouth. There's horrific gore at times and amputations. Opening scene, there's a big barn that burns and a horse goes running through the darkness, lit on fire. That will be in my brain forever. Actually, the opening sequence might be the best part of the whole movie. It's total darkness. You can kind of make out some like landscape, like some mountains and whatnot. And you hear the brother sisters, and I think you hear Joaquin yelling, "Hey, I'm so and so from the brother sisters, and you got to come out. We're here for your man," because like they're hired guns.
Yeah.
And then they're like, "We're gonna come and kill you." And then all of a sudden, guns start going off, and it was like a wide shot, like a really like big long wide shot. So like you know the characters, the little ants, and you can't even really see them until the guns start going off, and it's almost like flashes, fireworks and flashes. That was maybe the best part of the whole movie for me.
Yeah. Overall, what are your impressions?
It's a C. Mm. Now, what's weird is, as I was going to sleep and thinking about it, like if you're a person who sees a movie like once a month or something, you rarely see movies.
You consider that rare?
Yeah.
For the average person, not person who listens to the show.
You know, someone who listens to the show or, you know, rare for sure with Netflix and at home.
Our wives watch less than one movie a month, by far.
My wife, like when I go on, you know, when she watches movies, when I'm like on tour, when I'm like out of town for the weekend,
she'll
I'll
come show you
and she'll have seen three or four movies. I'm like, what, why do you wait till I leave? I want to watch. So anyways, there's a lot of story here. There's a lot of rich characters, I guess. It seems like it's sturdy. Like I can see a lot of people who don't see many movies enjoying this one. There's a lot of stuff to love here, but there's a lot of stuff to be kind of meh. It's a C. It's a 3-star movie for me.
Right.
And maybe I was missing something. Maybe there was something much bigger going on, but I don't think there was. I don't think there was. It's a kind of movie where it would have had to be like really profound and life changing for me to love it with the characters that were set up. And there's a certain sequence that occurs that's very, very focal, important to the entire pivotal story. I mean, it's maybe the climax of the film. The way it was shot was just kind of blah. It's kind of blah. Really? That's the way.
Yeah, ends the whimper.
But yeah, it was based on a book, so God knows. And I guess John C. Reilly actually loved the book, and he got the rights to it a number of years ago. So
that would make sense.
He was like be one of the producers on this. Also, interesting fact: they're playing brothers, but John C. Reilly and Joaquin Phoenix. They both played Johnny Cash. Well, John C. Reilly played a version of Johnny Cash.
Oh, like, Walk Hard?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is interesting, right? And they're brothers. They're both good. Everyone's solid in this. You know what? Everyone's not solid.
Wow, caught yourself.
They all have a certain like dialect, and they're talking, you know, from that era, and except for Riz Ahmed, he just sounds like he's from San Francisco, like today. That's another great scene in this movie, is they actually go to San Francisco because they're in those little podunk towns, you know, like these little towns that sprout up out of nowhere and for the gold rush,
sure.
And then go to San Francisco, and it's like 1850s San Francisco, and they're blown away by it, and they just can't believe how big and opulent and how much stuff's going on, and they stay in a hotel. That was actually kind of a fun scene. That was actually a good scene. I like that. But the rest of the movie is like, it's a September dumping ground
movie. How long is it?
2 hours and 1 minute.
That's a long movie.
Yeah, it's
for meh.
It's not, unless you're a giant fan of John C. Reilly or Joaquin. Are there giant Joaquin fans? That'd be weird.
I like Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know. I have a hard time envisioning devoted Joaquin Phoenix fans.
You know what I did? You know, and I do this sometimes with slow plotting movies. This is a slow movie. He's a good actor. Slow plotting movie. So I do weird things with my mind, and I was imagining River Phoenix, like, you know, in all of Joaquin's roles. Mm-hmm. Wondering if, like, River Phoenix, even though they're very different, but I'm wondering, like, what if River Phoenix just lived and was in all...
Was like an A-list star.
So I started imagining him in Her, and then I was imagining him in The Master. I was imagining him in this movie. I was kind of like trying to like mentally imagine his face. Right. And then I realized, oh, I miss that River Phoenix. Gladiator. I really miss that guy. I miss him.
Right. Yeah, indeed. The opposite of a 2-hour movie is a brisk 65-minute documentary. I was inspired. Came across this on HBO, had to watch it. Meet the Donors. Meet the Donors is a movie, a documentary about a dark money, Citizens United, donors to campaigns. I thought because of our topic this week, corrupt politicians.
So like the Koch brothers?
So what happens is this is a Alexander Pelosi documentary. She, of course, the daughter of Nancy Pelosi, director of documentaries I've liked very much, The Trials of Ted Haggard. Did you see that one? Where she follows around Ted Haggard on his San Francisco 2.0 and Homeless, the Motel Kids of Orange County.
I saw all those.
These are all very good. She made a movie in 2016 called Meet the Donors, and is about campaign contributions and the dark money that springs up from the Citizens United decision from the Supreme Court.
What year is this?
This is 2016. It's a couple years old. She has a very interesting, speaking of camera style, it's a real, I can't recall seeing this before, and it's shot like a regular documentary. What she's doing is she goes to like the list, like that you have to publish, like the list of biggest donors, right? To like PACs and stuff like that. And she just goes down the list and tries to interview them, and with not much success, but she actually does get to interview a few of these billionaires, these multi-billionaires. And she's just talking to them about why you do this. Where does your money go? Why do you donate so much money? And while they're filming it like a regular documentary, she's sitting across from them, like I'm sitting across from you, but she's holding a camera as she's talking to them, and it keeps cutting away to these very sort of Dutch angles, I guess you would call them, the close-up, you know.
She's not a good camera woman, is what you're saying.
No, she's a director, and she's kind of doing it for effect, but it was a very interesting effect to see these guys who are sort of, you know, shown from a weird, oblique, askew angle,
right?
Talking about...
Does it make you feel like you're sitting on the table almost?
A little bit, yeah. Like a fly on the wall. Like you're sitting adjacent to the table.
Had lunch with them and shot a video and shows it to you on your phone.
It was kind of compelling.
Ron Burkle?
I didn't recognize the
Ron
name.
Ron Burkle.
I don't recognize the name.
He's the owner of the Ralph's supermarket chain out here. He also owns the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I know who he is now because you talked about it before. Mm-hmm. No, he's not in here. Most of the billionaires look at it, Anderson, as investing. A lot of them look at it as patriotic. Like, I'm doing my patriotic duty.
That's a line that they say.
I think they believe it, though.
Really?
I think they believe it. These guys, I mean, I think... In order to get to this level of wealth, you have to be a bit of a sociopath, and you have to believe certain lies.
And also, you know, to play the devil's advocate of me, who is very, I don't trust, you know, I'm very cynical. But
What?
You know, maybe if you make that much money, you do kind of appreciate, you know, old Uncle Sam, and you feel like, you know, you're one of those people like, only in this country could I come
here. Yeah, well,
here,
America,
you know?
So set
I don't
up to
give back.
Is set up for you to experience success.
Even
you,
though it's
yes,
not
there
because
are,
of people like this.
There are many jolly white men. Many jolly white men.
Jolly
each
white
one,
men.
Each
yeah.
one jollier and whiter, mm-hmm. jollier and whiter than the last.
Yeah.
These are mega donors, of course. The donor class is what they call them. Yeah, the interview style was kind of almost combative. It was like, you know, right in their face. I will say this, there were some true idealists, like people who really thought they were like affecting change or like, you know, affecting policy, but then others that just want access. Like there's this weird, and it's more than one of them have this sort of like a wall full of pictures, you know, them with Bill Clinton, them with George Bush, them with whoever.
It's like a trophy.
And exactly. It was like a wall hunting. Of trophies, like a wall of like, you know, weird animal heads.
I know of a lot of people. I used to talk to Drew about that a lot, Dr. Drew, because he would get, he gets accosted on the street all the time for selfies and whatnot. And then he also had, oh, I shouldn't say that, but like people would come into the studio on certain nights when big name celebrities were coming in a Love Line, and they would always get like a nice picture with them and then frame it and put it on their wall. Right. And I remember just talking shit about it to Drew, and Drew actually talked to one of these people about it and shamed him into taking all the pictures down.
Really? Yeah. Who was that person?
I'm not going to name names, but he shamed him.
I actually
got a bunch of empty
I did the
frames now at home.
I did the take a picture with all the people who came into Love Line, but I was like 22. Yeah. I grew out of that pretty
quickly.
Guess
quick, how many like. Pictures I took with people
I
at
did
Love
like
Line.
Two.
I think three.
Three.
Guys from Sunny, it's always Sunny in Philadelphia. Rainn Wilson from my buddy who loved The Office. And I got pushed into a picture with Jane's Addiction just because Anne knew how much I love them.
Here is the I since the Adam Carolla show started the podcast, I've only taken pictures with three guests as well. I've grown out of taking pictures.
You've
yes, I grew up a little bit, but the three guests were Ewan McGregor. Mm-hmm. These are all people I'm big fans of. Ewan McGregor,
right?
Ed O'Neill,
right?
Ed O'Neill,
that's Ed O'Neill. You got to
Barry Zito.
I don't know who that is.
Pitcher for the Giants.
Come on, get out of here.
World Series champion.
Did he have like a shoe polish beard? One of those guys.
And a USC Trojan, by the way.
Ah, Jesus.
Come on.
All right, let's get move on. Okay, no one remembers the name of your 65
minute. Meet the Donors is a fake solid. You're not going to spend. Movie. You're not going to invest a ton of time. It's 65 minutes. It's solid.
I get it. Invest. I get
yes.
It.
If politics is something that interests you, you really should see this one. Meet the Donors.
I was assigned a film.
Were you?
I was assigned a film. Back-to-back weeks, Brian's assigned me a film, a documentary about a comedian.
Mm.
This one's about a comedian who's no longer with us called Come Inside My Mind.
Yeah.
Directed by Marina Zenovic, director of Roman Polanski Wanted, which I saw in theaters, actually, and was very meh. But Robin Williams, Come Inside My Mind. This is another Talking Heads documentary with tons of archival footage, lots of B-roll footage from Mork and Mindy,
indeed.
As well as B-roll footage from a few of the bigger movies that he did. And a movie that was disturbing at times, a movie that was sad for sure, a movie that really gives you a different angle and a different idea once you're done with it of who Robin Williams is.
It's also bitter.
You'll never
it's also bittersweet at times.
Think of Robin Williams the same.
Yeah, you see the incredible talent, but you're like, oh, going too soon.
Yeah. And not having really any idea as to what caused him to hang himself, I think
they
you
don't
have a
get
much,
into that part too much.
You have a much better. They don't actually even say how he did kill himself. They just talked about him killing himself. But this is what the whole movie is kind of coming to, moving towards. And you know that is going to be at the end of it because of when this movie came out after his death, and it was actually pretty compelling and. I have a much better understanding of why he did what he did when before I just thought of like, you know, normal Robin Williams. Why would he do that?
Mm-hmm.
Really talked about his timing and his acting as opposed to his stand up and his.
Right.
A lot of it was because I'm jaded and I've seen so many of these movies. It was the same old story, you know, rise to fame too quick, too soon, you know, the drugs. But then he continued. He had many decades after that.
Then he settled in.
He could
became
have died like John
a
Belushi.
Actor, like a jet, like movie star.
Right. And, you know, it's where that story ends so often with like the John Belushi of the world, which they talk about how he was with John Belushi the night that he died or the night before he died.
That's right. That sobered him up.
It continues. Like he has another 30 years after that. And I liked it. I like Gottfried. I like Gilbert more.
Yeah, I think I did too.
But this is probably a more quality documentary.
Mm. This one feels, yeah, it's, I guess that's the difference. That's a good difference you're drawing between the two. Gilbert, I kind of, you know, was more, honestly, a little more memorable for me.
And it was
me.
More about access because Gilbert's still alive.
Yeah. And
it wasn't a puff piece.
No, not at all.
And I think if anything, Robin Williams was a little more of a puff piece.
It was very flattering. But also, Robin Williams' documentary was clearly just, how do I say, better made? Like it was more artfully done.
More well-crafted, yeah. But not as effective.
Yeah.
I don't know if not as effective. For what it was set out to do, which is paint a full picture of Robin Williams within 2 hours, I think it did that.
Yeah. It's 100% of Rotten Tomatoes.
What's upsetting, what was most upsetting to me was Billy Crystal.
Why?
He just came off as, I didn't like the way he came off as.
I mean, in the modern day interviews or in like archival stuff?
Modern day interviews, yes.
He doesn't seem like a fun dude.
He used to come to my basketball games when I was a little kid and root for me because his daughter was on my basketball team. And my parents were very thrilled that Billy Crystal was there. Some old man was rooting for me. I'm like, why? Who cares? Mm. Who cares? And they were very excited. Yeah. He you know what? I should have known it because you know what he wore back then?
What was that?
He wore a jacket with soap dish.
Oh, the soap that he was on?
Yeah, the show that he was on? That was the show that made him famous at the time. He wore the jacket to the games.
Hey, everyone.
But it was weird because I was like 7, 8 years old and there was like, you know, like maybe 9 people at the game watching and he was one of them. He'd always come and he was always really nice.
God, that must have been pre-SNL.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
Wow.
It was like 70s.
Wow.
Late 70s.
Yeah, because he was on like in the early 80s, like 81, 82.
And then he did that Marvelous. But yeah, he kind of comes off. I don't want to just start talking shit about one guy, but like he just kind of came off as so grandiose.
Yeah.
All right. I was disappointed by that.
But overall, you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. Good. It's a great portrait. It's a skillfully made portrait of a tortured artist.
It's one of those true cliches. Like it's everything you kind of would expect. It hits all the hallmarks, but they're well done.
And he's an interesting enough guy that it's effective. You know, if you do this exact same style movie about someone who had a very dull life, it would be a very dull movie. Like this movie was about as exciting as you know Robin Williams' life was. So. I would have liked to see some more comedians weigh in. I wonder if they cut any.
I have Billy Crystal, Bob Goldthwait, Lewis Black, David Letterman, Eric Idle, and Stephen Martin as being some of the people I talked to. I don't remember how much.
You know what else I realized while watching this is I like real Steve Martin. I realized that already from hearing him on Stern. But acting Steve Martin, I can't stand. Like when he was doing the interview, the post, standing at the podium talking about what was the play that they did?
Oh, was it
the two-man play?
Yeah. Not. Porgy and Bess. Waiting for Godot.
Was that it?
Yeah,
Waiting for Godot.
Yeah.
And he was great in the interviews where he was just talking about it. But then they show the clips of him, and he's just doing all the things like making his arms jelly. It's like, all right.
Yeah, this is mostly narrated by Robin Williams, like obviously archival, but
is
it? As I recall, it's mostly him telling his story.
No.
So like, no.
No.
Who's telling a story?
Various talking heads.
I don't disagree.
That's not. I just saw it like two days ago.
I just saw it 2 weeks ago.
It's weird that you would write that down, but that's untrue.
I just saw it.
It's not true.
I just feel like I just saw it 2 days ago.
I don't think that Robin Williams actually.
I feel like I saw
speaking,
it earlier today, actually.
You know what? It opens up with him.
I feel like I saw it. I'm watching it right now.
You know what made me feel guilty was making a light of the title and saying, come inside my face when I was calling it that. Mm. And once I was watching, I'm like, that's rude.
It's not nice.
Rude. Yeah. I think you say that because like it opens up with a quote of his or something, but you know, there's no like Tupac thing going on here where it's him narrating his own life. Mm. That doesn't happen.
Did it?
But Roger Ebert was still alive when they made the movie, so that made
no,
sense.
No, he wasn't.
Roger Ebert wasn't.
They depicted his death in the movie.
Yeah, I know. That's how they made it while he was alive.
I don't think they did.
They were like at his bedside.
Oh, okay. Yes. I thought
they were shooting the movie while he was alive.
They came out while he was
they
alive.
They started Come Inside My Face. I did it again.
Anderson.
They started Come Inside My Mind after Robin Williams had left the planet.
Son of a bitch. That's true.
Oh, you know what's funny, too? And then we'll move on. But I can't stand 70s humor. I can't stand it.
Okay.
When they're showing like archival stuff of him on stage, I didn't laugh. It's uncomfortable. It's hokey. And then as he gets a little bit further along and he's in the 90s, and then actually I watched this with the wife. The wife and I both laughed out loud when he was doing the USO and right in the middle of his set, some trumpets go off and all the Marines turn their back on him. And his reaction to that.
Oh, shit.
And then when they all came back, he's like, that's something I'll never forget. I've never been in a show where I simultaneously all of you say, fuck this guy and turn their back on me. Like I don't know if it's because it must be because if I was born earlier, I would probably think 70s humor was funny, but there's nothing funny about it.
That's funny. You mentioned that because I wrote down
all the little voices,
all that stuff, all its early stand-up stuff that I saw in the movie. It was about 5% material and 95% performance. Like, yeah, there wasn't a lot of material there. He was just kind of, you know, pantomiming riffing on stage. Yeah, which is a talent in itself, I guess. But you're right. I didn't find myself a huge fan of that era.
If you watch the opening sequence of this documentary, Come Inside My Mind, it's when he's in the inside of the actor studio, right? Is that what he's doing there? And some kind of old show.
Yeah, SD, I think so. Yeah, with that. Yeah,
James they're Lipton talking about how his brain is so fast, and then he gets up and he does this whole insane quick. Also, he helped it with his speech pattern and speaking in the way that he did. He made it sound like he was actually talking faster than he really was too. And he did this thing and it seemed to be on the spot, and it probably was. And it was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, the guy had a mind that worked like very few people on this earth.
Yes. But tortured soul.
Coming up next, Logan, make sure this you actually hits, on, the, hits the recording.
You can find that on HBO Go or HBO Now, or that's pretty much it. Or you can rent it for $4.99. I got rid of my HBO the day before I watched this, which was a poor choice.
Why would you do that?
I wasn't thinking. But I've since, you know what? If your cable provider is nailing you for $18, and I know this is small potatoes, but a guy like me who's living on a pretty strict budget, if they're nailing you for like $17.99, like mine was, $18-19 for HBO, just go do it through Amazon. Give Bezos your money. It's like $14.99.
There you go.
$3 less, and fuck you, cable company. How about that? Fuck you, DirecTV. How about that? I used to love my DirecTV, and then what? AT&T comes along, now I can't stand.
Got their tentacles in there.
Can't stand DirecTV now.
The worst.
The worst, Brett.
Actually, that's funny. I used to love DirecTV, too.
It was great.
I had great experiences every time I called customer service.
I know. Now it's just the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the worst, Brett. You know what? I used to call up and say, hey, I'm going to cut the cord. I can't take this. You guys are murdering me. $170 a month for cable, for DirecTV. And we're like, oh, let's see what we can do. And you hear typing. Next thing you know, my bill is like half, cut in half, and I have more channels. Yeah. I did this just 2 weeks ago. I'm like, hey, yeah, I can't take it anymore. I just saw my bill. It's like $170 again. It keeps creeping up. I'm going to cut the cable. They're like, all right, you want to do that today or tomorrow? Yeah. They don't give a fuck.
Yep.
I'm like, let me talk to the wife. I'll call you back.
He calls your bluff.
He did not care, Brian.
Very upset. What if they had the notes, like, obviously bluffing?
They might. They're an evil company.
Very good.
I thought I was such a tough guy. I was in the traffic. I'm like, I'm going to do this right now.
And I'll give a piece of my mind.
I'm like, you should have seen I'm sure the reaction on my face was very startled. I got to talk to the wife. Call you. Call you back.
There's interference. I can hear you. I'm going over the hill. Coming up next, we'll talk about some corrupt politicians next. Anderson, it was so lovely to see you and Jillian and Atticus at Tessa's birthday party.
Oh, yeah. Her big 2-year-old birthday party.
It was wonderful. Did the boy have a good time?
He had a great time.
I know that Jillian had a good time because she had a cupcake.
Yes, she had. My wife had a cupcake, which is her favorite, and the boy was not his first experience with the bounce house, but the first time he actually got inside.
Oh, really?
He's not 2 yet.
Wait, he's never been inside. He's been around a bounce house, but not inside.
I took him in to one, like just in my arms, and he was panicking. This is really? Like maybe 8 months ago.
How did he do? I didn't see.
This time he loved it.
Oh, sweet.
It's my go-to video to show him now when he's getting a little bit upset. I'll show him video of the
bounce house. Remember this?
The selfie that we did of the video, yes.
That's good. That makes me think someone got an Amazon e-gift card on our Amazon banner on AndersonandBrian.com. Nice. Yay, it's your birthday is what it says. Probably not for Tessa, but maybe think of it. So thanks for coming, buddy. Hope you had a good time. Other things purchased on the Amazon include banner at the top of AndersonandBrian.com include a Panasonic Lumix professional lens, AOC Ultra Slim Full HD portable LED monitor. Interesting. Polk audio surround speakers, a pair in black, Garmin Vivo Active 3 GPS smartwatch, and a Nokia Steel HR hybrid smartwatch were both purchased. Coleman Carlsbad Fast Pitch Cabin Tent with screen room, six person tent. It's got to be pretty big. DeWalt 20-volt Max Compact Brushless Drill and Impact Combo Kit. Ray-Ban Caravan Sunglasses with Deluxe Eyewear Accessories Bundle. Echo Second Generation Smart Speaker with Alexa. Limited Edition Walnut Finish. Why wouldn't they offer that all the time? Why does the walnut finish have to be limited edition? Seems like something you'd offer all the time. ZTE Axon 7 Mini 4G. Is that a phone, Logan? Mini ZTE Axon 7 Mini 4G LTE?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't cover phones, but it sounds familiar.
Well, I don't cover phones. I didn't mean to make it sound very snobbish. Similac NeoSure infant formula with iron. Sports sensor swing speed radar. I guess for you golfers and or baseball players out there. Or cricket players. Amazon e-gift card, I mentioned that before. Yay, it's your birthday. Instant Pot 7-in-1 multi-use programmable pressure cooker, slow cooker, rice cooker, steamer, saute, yogurt maker, and warmer. You can make yogurt. Speed and Strength men's Black 9 moto shoes footwear. Sterling shelf liner, rigid non-adhesive shelf liner. Wisdom Panel 3.0 breed identification DNA test kit, presumably for animals, although I suppose you could test a person's breed. Car auto tire pressure monitoring system. Car Pro Sea Quartz 50 milliliter kit. Arm & Hammer Clump and Seal Platinum litter. Logan, Destiny 2 Forsaken, an annual pass for PlayStation 4.
Video game? Expansion pack.
Oh, very nice. Logitech USB headset was purchased, as well as an Oster, 2-pound Express Make Bread Maker. Express Bake Bread Maker. Try and say that.
I'm going to start making bread.
Really?
Yeah.
And finally, I kind of want this. Logan, should I get this? Nintendo Entertainment System NES Classic Edition.
No.
Oh, really? Why?
Because you'll play it for 5 minutes and never touch it again.
That's all I want.
All right. Well, if you want to spend $80 and do that.
It's an expensive 5 minutes, my friend.
It really is.
I know hookers. It'll be cheaper and
quicker. Can you get me one? Can you get me one? Oh, shit.
Here are the movies that I clicked through since the last time I saw you. The walnut version of the Hidden Fortress Criterion Collection.
Oh.
Limited edition walnut.
Limited walnut finish.
Yeah, Bogart and Bacall Collection, Casablanca, To Have and Have Not, 1944. The Big Sleep, 1946. Key Largo, 1948. And Dark Passage, 47. I will not tell you which of those I've seen and have not.
Okay.
Blumhouse, 8-movie horror collection. Get Out, Split, The Purge, The Purge Anarchy, The Purge Election Year, Unfriended. I kind of want to see Unfriended.
Do you really?
Yes.
No, you don't.
Ouija, Origin of Evil, and The Visit. Also, Phantom Thread was clicked through. Very different from all of those movies. Mission Impossible was clicked through. Solo, A Star Wars Story. A Raisin in the Sun, The Criterion Collection. Gilbert and True Romance, Director's Cut.
Well done.
The finest Tarantino movie ever made.
Not made by him.
A lot of Tarantino stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff about True Romance coming out. I guess it must be like the 25-year anniversary. Yeah.
94 to 20. Next year will be, yeah.
25.
Oh, no, was it 92?
94. All right, kids. Back to the
I'm Voltron. That's right. All five elements that make up the giant robot known as Voltron. And you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. It's just starting, nothing said. Welcome back. Time to talk about some corrupt politicians. Anderson, I got a nice mix here. I got some domestic, some foreign.
Oh, yeah?
Some local, some national, some international. Fictitious, some real. Some based on real people.
Wait, national, international?
Some are like local politicians, you know, like foreign? The mayor level. Yeah. Some are international, like, yeah, like heads of state.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, things of all that right. nature. Crimes, Anderson. They're all guilty of crimes. They range from cold-blooded murder to just old, good old-fashioned extortion and bribery.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna dig in.
All right. It sounds like your list is pretty solid. Do you want to
like
go first?
List.
Do you want to go first?
No, my list is good. I'm gonna go last. Oh, I love my number one. A movie that's never come up on this show.
That's what I meant.
Last.
I meant last.
Last.
All right.
Last. I'm gonna go first. You want me to?
I'll go first. If I'm gonna get shit, it might be on this one. Okay. So I threw it at the number five spot here.
Nope.
Bobby De Niro. He's played many roles.
Okay.
Done many things in the business.
Don't say wag the dog.
I'm saying wag the dog, Brad.
Are you really?
I am.
This is terrible.
Why is that?
All right.
Why is it terrible?
It convinced me why he's a corrupt politician.
Explain why it's terrible.
He's not a politician.
He works for the government.
I don't even think he works for the government.
He absolutely. He's a spook. This is what I talked about at the top of the
episode. I guess he is.
He's covering up for a morally corrupt president. Yeah. And this all happened. This was all written and directed and made and produced and even released before the whole scandal happened with Lewinsky.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened with the bombings after that with Clinton. So that's crazy.
Okay. This is a very underrated movie. I'm glad you have it.
It's
on
a great movie and an excuse to talk about it.
Barry Levinson.
Barry Levinson film. probably his second best movie to Rain Man, really, right?
Oh, wow. I like Diner better.
What? Nah.
Diner and Rain Man and Wag the Dog, I think, are all up there for me for favorite Barry Levinson movies.
So the story's right there in the title. It's all about the tail wagging the dog rather than the dog wagging the tail. And it's all about perception and corruption as to the truths of what the American people can accept and will believe.
It's also become, it's one of those movies that's become a shorthand, you know, like a verbal shorthand. Like when a government or a regime will do something to distract from a larger scandal, it's like a wag the dog moment.
Wag the dog situation got it going here, yeah.
It's become a meme unto itself.
And really, it's not the only movie. There's many movies that I did research for. I did a lot of research for movies that ended up not making my list because there wasn't a whole lot of corruption. It was just a kind of a cynical view of politics in general. But the way Hollywood sees the American people is pretty abhorrent, I think, especially back in the day. Like, you think of a movie like Deliverance, and like what Hollywood was saying about middle America there. You know what I mean? Like, if middle American white rednecks were a race, like, that would be the most racist movie ever made.
That's a good point.
But this is another one.
It does paint a flattering picture of certain parts of the country.
Like, Bob Roberts is a movie that I did a bunch of research about, and that's, you know, really paints America as fucking fools who will swallow anything fed to them. But that's definitely the case here with Wag the Dog. And there's a scandal with the president, and they need to hire a Hollywood producer who is Dustin Hoffman, who comes in, and they have to make a different storyline that involves war, and then it ultimately involves a POW who is actually an insane person. It's very, very funny.
What was it? Woody the president Harrelson. Was, who we never see, was accused of touching a Firefly girl or whatever they called them. Whatever. It was some sex scandal where he touched some underage scandal. Girl.
And it was pretty mild considering today's climate, what was happening. That's what I'm actually very interested in is the... And I'm not a Reitman fan, as you know, but that movie, End of the Line, or what?
Is this the Gary Hart movie?
Gary Hart movie. I'm curious as to how that's going to play. Like, is it going to be like...
How quaint.
How quaint? Yeah. Are they going to play to that as a strength in the movie? Or is it going to be like, why is there a movie about this? It's so innocuous, and who cares? Like, how... Or they're going to talk about how the time was so different, so it's worthy of a movie.
That something like that could take down a front runner for the presidency.
And now...
Or at least for the nomination.
It could still take down... Many a candidate, but not certain candidates. Some certain candidates are Teflon now.
Yeah. Certain ones.
So anyways, yes, this Wag the Dog is it's a very a fun movie.
Agreed. I will not yield and give you any credit for your actual choice, but for the movie, I do.
You absolutely should yield. He's a government agent of sorts, and he not an elected official.
No,
you have a myriad of different types of politicians. Right?
No.
Is this guy... What do politicians do? What do? They try and sway opinions.
Make
sway,
laws.
Sway opinion.
Make laws.
They don't all make laws. Not what every politician does.
No, you're right. You're right. There are like staffers. Like I would consider like the underlings, like in the West Wing, politician. I don't know. Are they? I probably should have come to a more. I mean, mine are all politicians, but I probably should have come to a more conclusive definition. I guess. Like. The head of the FBI is an administrator. He's not a politician, for example. Just for example. The head of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
All right. So I knew I might get shit for that one.
No good.
Agreed. But
number five.
It's my number five.
Number five for me.
I don't give a fuck.
Number five for me is a corrupt politician. The only one of mine that is actually a real person in real life. U.S. Senator Owen Brewster.
What?
Played by...
This is your only?
What?
Yeah. All right. I'm shocked. Okay.
One's based on a real person and the other three are fictitious.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Why?
The other three. You got four others, right?
Said one is based on another person.
Oh, okay.
And then three are,
And then this one is a real person.
This one is a real person. U.S. Senator Owen Brewster was a real senator from Maine from 1941 to 1952. He was portrayed by Alan Alda in The Aviator.
Mm-hmm.
Alda in The Aviator. And I don't think his portrayal was too far from the truth. He, in real life, was the archetypal slimy politician. He doesn't seem like a great guy from the reading that I did. He was an early supporter of the KKK. Enthusiastic supporter of McCarthyism, but adept at Joe McCarthy, and portrayed as a, quote, an errand boy for one trip in Pan Am, in Noah Dietrich's words. Noah Dietrich, I believe the character played by John C. Reilly in The Aviator. He had memoirs.
Quite the delivery.
John C. Reilly. Well, doing the opposite of whispering. John C. Reilly.
Appreciate that.
During the now famous hearings, of course, that were portrayed in The Aviator, Hughes accused Brewster of accepting bribes from Pan Am and offering to cancel the hearings if Hughes would sell TWA to Pan Am. Hughes' accusation, this is kind of a remarkable moment in history. Howard Hughes' accusations, right? That you're a corrupt politician and you're, you know, one trip, you know, errand, blah, 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 actually were so effective that Brewster himself stepped down as the chairman of the hearings and actually became a witness at the hearings he was previously chairing, which is not very common.
Unprecedented.
I cannot say unprecedented, but I can say very uncommon. Yes, it was an ironic victory for the little guy. That's how it was seen, because of course Hughes was, of course, enormously wealthy.
David Goliath.
Yeah.
David Goliath.
I know, and ironically, David was kind of a Goliath himself. But in the movie, he is a slimy... Remember Alan Alda in The Aviator?
Yeah, he's
just a slimy politician.
Good pick. I'm still shocked that my number one is not on your list, which you showed your hand by saying that you don't have any other actual...
real person.
Real people, which is surprising to me. So, all right.
I did leave one off that I think might be your number one.
I'm glad, because I hate it when you do number four. Hey, another quick little fun fact about Pan Am and Gilbert Gottfried, going back a couple weeks now to that documentary, Gilbert, which is very good, and his hoarding of soaps and various things that he would get on his road trip. And his wife told the camera that she actually found Pan Am soaps and things from Pan Am flights. That's how long it's been going on for.
That's crazy. That's like, at least the late 80s at the latest.
If Gilbert just did that and he wasn't a comedian, he was just like door-to-door salesman that traveled.
When did Pan Am go away?
I would think the 60s.
I've been confusing with TWA.
I used to fly TWA, never Pan Am. But if Gilbert was just some door-to-door salesman who did the same thing, he would deserve his own documentary. Like, there could be a whole documentary skillfully, if it was made by a skillful filmmaker, about a guy who just hoards to that level.
Just an eccentric fellow.
Number four for me. Four? Oh. Go ahead.
Number four.
When did Pan Am go out?
I'm looking it up right now.
You either minimize your Rotten Tomatoes?
No, that can't be right.
What does it say, 95?
Minimize the Rotten Tomatoes. That's good.
You catching up there, Brian?
That's good. I'm busy looking at Rotten Tomatoes.
You say that can't be right.
It
said 1995?
Because it says commenced operations in 1927. I thought it said canceled operations. I was like,
so you misread.
Oh, I was right. It's collapse in 1991. I said it the late 80s would have been.
91?
Yeah.
Pan Am was going until 91?
That's what it says here.
Really? You know how you can tell a movie takes place in the 60s nowadays?
Ceased operations December 4th.
Because Pan Am is at the airport. Every time there's a movie in the 60s, they got to throw Pan Am in there. There must be some reason like that. Maybe it's free trademark or something.
Downturn.
All right, number four for me. 1983 film, Brian. You ever seen Dead Zone?
No. Is that the one with Christopher Walken?
Christopher Walken, little Martin Sheen. Martin Sheen, very, very similar to modern day Charlie Sheen in his portrayal of Greg Stilson, a senator, a would-be senator, running for senator and ultimately president. And knowing what we know from Christopher Walken's character, what he will do if he becomes president. It's a Stephen King novel based on a Stephen King novel. He's pretty corrupt with what his future plans are for being president and leaving his indelible mark on the planet and how he will go down in history and what his ultimate plans are. The ultimate corruption. He could be number one if I really wanted to make an argument about it, but I didn't think he would have seen this movie.
No, I didn't, and
it's hard to talk about with giving too much away.
This is one where we can see the future, right?
Yeah, you can see the future. So Christopher Walken's character is kind of, you know, interested in him. He's got some friends that are that are into his cause, and he goes to one of his rallies, shakes his hand, and then he sees the future.
Yeah,
and he
sees
what's going to happen. This man is going to be president one day, and this is what's going to happen. And it all comes in full circle, and it's a beautiful ending and poetic and all that. Speaking of which, there's a movie coming out.
The Dead Zone is not streaming anywhere for free. You can rent it for $3 on Amazon.
It's a fun, hokey 80s flick, 1983.
That's right.
There's a movie coming out called The Trump Prophecy. I talked about it on the app disaster a little bit. And that's kind of similar to The Dead Zone, now that I think about it. It's all about this man's firsthand accounts of how a retired firefighter woke up in the middle of the night one night, went downstairs, turned on C-SPAN, and saw Trump on there. And he heard a voice saying, "This is the future."
That's right.
President of the United States of America. That's like back in 2011 that this happened. And then apparently there's a bunch of other people out there that experienced a similar phenomena, and they made an entire movie about this, and it's playing two nights only, October 2nd and October 4th, I think. And the more I think about it, the more I want to go to one of these screenings.
Where is it going to be?
I don't know yet. Come on, let's go. Because it's too far away, but I want to go.
Can we go together?
I kind of want to make an event of it.
Make a Film Vault event?
I want to see
a listener meetup?
But we can do that. I'm afraid of something happening in one of these.
Oh, really?
Screenings.
No.
You know what I mean? You never know. The Trump prophecy. I'm kind of fascinated what it's going to be, what kind of people will show up. And it's not prophecy. A phantom event.
The Trump prophecy movie locations. I must find it.
Yeah, I kind of need to see this, I think.
Oh, Fathom Events. It's going to be a Fathom Events thing. So they're
is a Phantom Events.
Yeah.
Fathom. It is? I thought they only did one. I'm just
to come up on Google.
All right, number four for me. 1983. Oh, Dead Zone. This. Dead Zone. What?
I got to find this.
No, let's move on to your number four.
Nope, Dead Zone.
Please move on. No, you're talking about Trump prophecy. Move on to your number four.
I must find.
No, you don't have to find. Let go.
Oh, it's going to be everywhere. No, not everywhere. Oh, this is great. Where do you want to go? You want to go to the Playa Vista 9 or we want to go to the cinema?
Brian, this is so awful. I should also mention David Cronenberg directed The Dead Zone. Cronenberg.
Oh, I'm not going to that.
David Cronenberg. Why? What are you not going to go to?
LA Live. No way. I don't know.
Brian, come on. Let's go. Come on, dude. What's wrong
with
you?
Let's go to Playa Vista. Let's go.
Stop it.
Let's go. I'll go right
now. Would you please
I got
to your number four? Let's
number
go.
Four. Based on a real person, the real person being Camden, New Jersey Mayor Angelo Arricchetti. Angelo Arricchetti,
Garcetti.
Mayor of Camden, New Jersey, was portrayed as Mayor Carmine Polito in American Hustle by Jeremy Renner. Stop looking at your phone. I'm talking about a movie you like.
Yes, you are.
What movie are you talking about?
You're talking about Jeremy Renner in...
I just said the movie, you son of a bitch. American Hustle.
American Hustle.
He was the mayor, Carmine Polito, in American Hustle.
Came up in my research.
Yes, 2013, directed by David O. Russell, based on the real-life Camden, New Jersey mayor, convicted of bribery and conspiracy, Anderson, in the FBI's AbScam investigation of the early 80s. Fun fact, AbScam, originally a contraction of Arab Scam, but then the American Arab Relations Committee complained, and they got it changed to Abdul Scam. Scam, because apparently Abdul was the name of the fictitious company they were investigating.
And then Abdul Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul Jabbar, that's right.
Well, what's her name? The singer. Paul Opposites Abdul? Track. Yeah, Paul Abdul then came on and she got upset.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
So Jeremy Renner's Carmine Polito, if you remember the movie, actually kind of an idealist, comes across as kind of a good-natured, if simple man. Yeah. Like he really does care about the people of Camden, New Jersey, and he insists that any scam he's a part of benefit the people.
A lot of rationalization.
Kind of a Robin Hood type, right. Although he also takes for himself a decent, if simple man who is sadly very easily compromised / corrupted.
Right.
I mean, he's a dirty politician. He gets caught up in this scandal, and of course, I think it ends his political career. But kind of an idealist, he's a sympathetic character.
I didn't have him on my list because he just wasn't that conniving. He wasn't that.
Yeah,
dirty.
No, he's a little more tame.
Yeah, yeah. And he might have had some good points. He might have had that Robin Hood. Maybe he was doing more good than harm.
Mine are about to get dark.
All right, I'm going to keep mine light here. Oh. Number three for me. This little movie from 1939.
Wow.
I don't know if you've seen it.
Mr. Smith. I have seen it.
Did you
it's
enjoy
very
it?
Sweet. It's very sweet. A little hokey.
Oh, it's so
very
sweet.
It's very sweet.
It goes down smooth.
It does.
Guys, it goes down smooth. If you have not seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, 1939.
It is not timeless. It is quite dated, but it is sweet. It's sweet.
I mean, as far as men's egos and corruption and...
Right, there are themes that...
There's all the themes are definitely very alive and thriving today.
But then there's the kids who are... He's fighting for the kids and they're on the balcony. It's pretty great.
So James Stewart... Jefferson Jeff Smith, he's the head of the Boy Rangers, and he's appointed a senator as a coin flip. Yeah, there's a senator dies and he needs to be appointed. They need to fill the spot.
They
and,
cynically fill it with like this idealist, like this young Boy Scout. They're going to put in
like their own stooge in there. Yeah. But then like his kids, like the guy that was in charge, Taylor, was it Taylor? I think it was Taylor. No, it wasn't. It was whatever. It doesn't matter. But long story short, like somewhat of a bumpkin, an idealist,
he's a real fish out of water.
Fish out of water. He goes to unnamed state, but he's supposed to be like a middle of the state. Once again, America, Hollywood, you know, poking fun at the at the middle of America. So he goes with all these ideals. He has no idea that men could be as corrupt and as evil and two-faced as they can be. Namely, Claude Rains as Senator Joseph Harrison, Joe Payne. He was friends with Smith's father, Smith's character's father, I should say, Mr. Smith. So he took him under his wing when he first got to D.C., to Washington.
That's right.
And he was shown on the ropes. And then, of course, there's a love affair, which is absurd. And Smith falls in love with his daughter. And that's just all not important, really.
Right. Very secondary. But rote.
Then there comes to be this filibuster that's somewhat iconic, especially back in the day. It's kind of lost in time.
Only thing anyone remembers about the film.
24-hour filibuster, and
he takes out an apple.
There's a real E tu Brutai moment with Payne really turning on him, and it's vicious. It goes down smooth. It really does. This is
a horse and his hair
wholesome
gone.
Movie. People love Miracle on 34th, and they love It's a Wonderful Life. I like this one quite a bit more. There's more to wrap my head around, maybe.
Okay. Have not
there's
seen
more
Miracle,
to hold on to. There's less slow moments, I think.
Right.
I put this one right up there with 12 Angry Men.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Really like this one. Okay, let's check the IMDb ratings.
That film is 20 years apart.
12 Angry Men.
It's 20 years difference.
See what I'm just saying that they both get me going.
18 years difference.
14.
Isn't
12 Angry Men is 57? 8.9. This is not going to go well for me.
No, this is a beloved movie.
It's a great movie. It really is. And I saw it later in life too. So 8.9 from 8.2. Not bad. No. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, 8.2 on the old IMDb. Anything like over 7 is pretty solid on IMDb.
That's right.
Everything's pretty middling, like in this
mid-sixes. If you can get into the 8s, you're a classic.
Horror films are like good if they're like in the high 4s, low 5s.
Really to adjust your scale.
All right. So, yeah, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's Senator Joseph Payne, played by Claude Rains, is my choice there.
Number 3 for me. Logan is the only one I have a clip for.
Governor Hooper. Hopper. Governor Hopper is the one who puts him in there.
Oh, really? I don't remember.
After
that.
Flipping a coin. Flips a
coin. And Hopper's the daughter? Hopper's daughter is the one?
No, Payne. And then the coin it doesn't land heads or tails, Brian. It lands
sideways.
Yeah, and then right by the newspaper article of Mr. Smith, something he's doing with the boys' club.
What does isn't his final act he's doing his
final act.
He's doing his filibuster and
I'm trying to sell this movie to people. I think that they would enjoy it.
He's doing the filibuster and he's so exhausted he collapses.
He faints, yes.
And doesn't it cause the guy to
Unprecedented. Unprecedented. Stop it. No, it's maybe it's a simpler time.
Indeed.
But I think that
it's a sweet movie, you're right.
Hey, stop it's patronizing.
Guileless. It's guileless.
Stop patronizing. I don't like the patronizing.
It's sweet. Number 3 for me. Oh, not sweet. Actually quite dark. Number 3, a movie that rarely comes up in the show. How often do we talk about The Godfather Part 2?
Shockingly, not much, considering you trying to swim through violent movie-going waters. You know what I mean?
What does that mean?
One of the first conversations we had about movies is you telling me that you thought Godfather 2 was better than Godfather 1.
I know. I would never say that.
You've since switched your tune.
I'm actually quite upset that you would say that.
I think you realize
I have never thought that.
You've said it numerous times. Numerous. The first time you approached me.
I'm so upset.
I was like, we'll do top 5 movies. One of the examples is we'll do top 5 mafia movies. And my number 1 would be Godfather 2, and my number 2 would be Godfather 1, and I would explain why.
I'm so upset right now.
That's what you said.
I'm so mad at you. Oh, I don't know where to begin.
Go ahead. Talk about Godfather.
I'm quite angry now.
Talk about your favorite of the Godfather movies.
I hate you, and I hate The Godfather Part 2 because while it is a very good movie, a Best Picture winner, people who say, I'll tell you what, it's better than Part 1.
You hear
I
it
hate
all
those
the time.
Brain dead idiots.
You hear
I hate
it all idiots. The time. It's the same movie. It's the second half of the same fucking movie.
It's a longer, less focused version of the first one. I'll say it. And I like it. It's a good movie.
I'll say it. Wow, I'll you're going it. Out on a limb there, Brian.
1974, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. U.S. Senator Pat Geary, played by G.D. Spradlin. He is a senator from Nevada. He's involved with the Corleone family due to their prevalence in Nevada's gaming industry, Anderson. He intentionally, perhaps, I believe he does, mispronounces the Corleone name at a public event. He's like, I'd like to thank the what's he call him? The
Corleones.
No. That's how you pronounce
Corleones.
It. Carly, he pronounces it.
Anonymous.
He ham-hands it. And then he insults Michael Corleone to his face after he attempts to extort him out of $250,000 for a gaming license. Michael Corleone says, I think the clip is going to say it, but basically the senator says, "If I know you want a gaming license here in Reno or whatever it is. If you want it, it's going to cost you $250,000. And here's what Michael says.
Price for the license is less than $20,000. Am I right?
That's right.
Now, why would I ever consider paying more than that?
Because I intend to squeeze you. I don't like your kind of people. Hmm? I don't like to see you come out to this clean country in your oily hair, dressed up in those silk suits, and try to pass yourselves off as decent Americans. I'll do business with you, but the fact is that I despise your masquerade. The dishonest way you pose yourself and your whole fucking family.
Probably not a good idea to say to a mafia don to his face. Mm. Things get complicated for Senator Geary when he wakes up later in one of Corleone's hotels with a dead prostitute in the room. He's passed out and he woke up and he doesn't know how it happened. By the way, Michael calls him on the irony of the corrupt senator, masquerading, calling him out and masquerading as true as good Americans. He's basically like, we're caught up in the same thing. Don't be a fool.
Yes.
But not a good move for Pat Geary to insult Michael Corleone, the godfather, the Don, to his face. Bad move. Geary.
Good pick.
Yeah.
I think his name is Jerry.
I think it's Pat Geary.
Hey, are we taking a break now?
Are we? Damn, come on next.
Whoa. Oh, you know what? My number one and two, I'm very bullish on.
Really?
Very strong. Yeah. One of them is kind of a your style pick, but I'll explain.
I'm excited. Next. Guys, betonline.ag is having a contest the contest is for me because it's they're pitting some Podcast One hosts against each other in a season-long NFL pick'em. And I'm still in it, although 2 out of 3 weeks so far I've gotten my best bet wrong, which means I lose 2 points instead of getting 2 points.
That must hurt you a lot.
It really hurts a lot.
It's be very quite painful. Brutal. I know
It's extremely painful, although I don't feel quite as bad because this week there's a huge upset where, I don't know if you follow Anderson, but the Buffalo Bills, the hapless Buffalo Bills, traveled to Minnesota and upset the Vikings.
Who knew?
Not just by a little bit. They whipped their asses. The only thing that makes me feel a little better is literally of the 15 other Podcast One hosts, 14 picked the
Bills?
No. Your best bet can be any game you
want. Oh, I see.
14 of the 15 contestants picked that game as their best bet.
This is all going on betonline.ag.
Indeed.
Over if you want betonline.ag.
Yes, the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge. If you want to check out the standings, go to podcastonesportsnet.com. If you want to make some wagers of your own, go to betonline.ag. You can actually bet on your favorite personality. You can make bets on any sports you want, including football. And if you use the promo code PODCAST1, you receive a 50% sign-up bonus. Whatever you deposit, you get 50% more. That's Podcast One to receive a 50% sign-up bonus.
Visit betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts, and our exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
Anderson, my Untucket shirt arrived.
Mm-hmm.
It arrived in the mail.
So did mine.
Ah, nice. I got they sent it to me. I didn't get to choose. They just sent me a shirt, and I'm very glad they did because I would not have chosen this style. It's not exactly my style, quote unquote, but it's a sharp looking shirt. It's dark blue. It's got the sort of the pockets, the flaps over the pocket. Mm-hmm. It's a cool looking shirt and meant to be worn untucked, and it looks pretty sharp.
That's the whole point. And it's buttoned down and like collar. You got collar on yours?
Of course.
I don't have a collar on mine.
Really?
It's like a different kind of collar. And it looks really good.
Oh.
And first thing I did, I opened it in front of the wife, hold it up. She goes, that's a great shirt. Where'd you get that?
Wow.
Swear to God, that's what happened.
Really?
Because she knows I don't dress too good, know-how.
The wife slash spouse slash significant other approval is a big thing when it comes to
absolutely
clothing.
And I was excited when I saw my Untucked show up because, like I said before, I actually approached this sponsor to get them on our show because I love the idea of not tucking shirts in. I do not like the tucking in of shirts. It's one of the main reasons why I've kept myself out of an office for my entire life, Brian, because it's mandatory in most of these offices, even if you're in the mailroom, to wear a button-down shirt tucked in. Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't.
Untuck that shirt with an Untuck It shirt, UNTUCKIT.com, untuckit.com. Use the promo code TFV for 20% off your entire purchase. No matter how much you buy, get 20% off with the code TFV.
You can buy 2 shirts, you can buy 5 shirts, you can buy 15 shirts, you can buy 40 shirts.
There's any number of shirts.
You'll get 20% off any number of shirts.
Untuckit.com.
17 shirts.
Untuckit.com. Welcome back. Time for our top two. And Anderson has promised a pick he stands by.
Two of them.
Oh, so you're bullish.
These two. I'm bullish on both.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you said your number two. Give me your top two.
Top two.
Okay.
Yeah. Number one and two. All right. This is a movie I was lucky enough to see in the theaters back in 2005. It is a Brian pick because, yes, it is a documentary. But if I have an,
I don't like this.
If I have an excuse to talk about this movie, oh, God damn it, I'm going to do it, Brian. Mm-hmm. Street Fight, 2005. Street Fight. You've seen this.
I have.
I signed this too.
This is Cory Booker, right?
Cory Booker, who's become, he grandstands.
I don't think I saw this actually.
Quite a bit these days. I do not like his stunt that he pulled during the Kavanaugh hearings where I'm going to show the emails. I don't care if it ends my political career. Mm. And like it turned out, that was very disappointing to me because I'm a Cory Booker fan. Mm. It's hard not to be a Cory Booker fan if you've seen Street Fight. Not to be confused with a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, Street Fighter. Very different movie.
Very different.
And every time you do a search, I learned just a couple days ago when I was doing research for this here episode, it's hard to find Street Fight on IMDb because everything points to Street Fighter.
Good news, Anderson. This is actually streaming on Amazon Prime and on Netflix.
That is fantastic news because people should enjoy this movie.
I don't believe I've seen this.
I don't know why I found myself in an old art house rundown theater that has since been closed on Fairfax, the Fairfax Lemley up there. But in 2005, I was had my ass in the seat watching this. I had no idea who Cory Booker was, and I definitely didn't know who Sharp James was, his opponent, who had been the mayor.
Sharp James. Sharp is not much
Sharp
better.
James. So the corruption and my number two pick is Sharp James, who dresses like a pimp.
Sharp James sounds like a Western like a poker legend.
He's been
Sharp James took him for $100.
The mayor of Newark for a number of years.
Wow.
I think 14 years or something. And Cory Booker, like this young, fresh-faced kid, is going up against him. And you really fall in love with Cory Booker. And like I said, I still follow Cory Booker. You can't be a fan of his after watching. You cannot help but be a fan of his after watching Street Fight. And you know, there's a lot of rumblings that he might run for president now. And it's really cool to have, you know, way back in 2005. Seeing this little documentary and fall in love with the guy. However, like I said, some of the stunts that he's pulled, and I'm hoping that he comes out of the weeds on this. But I'm not talking about Cory Booker. I'm talking about his opponent, Sharp James. This is for the mayoral race of Newark, New Jersey. And here's what Marshall Curry, director of Mistaken for Strangers, who I know a lot of our listeners know that. Here's what she captures on her camera, Brian. He captures on his camera.
Marshall.
Corrupt attempts by Sharp James and city employees, including both police and code enforcement, to sabotage Booker's campaign by using tactics that include shutting down local businesses that hold Booker fundraisers, demoting city workers who support Booker, and demolishing Booker's street signs and signs in violation of a standing order by a federal judge. He actually has Sharp James actually has some of his henchmen go out and just like, you know, it's like vote Booker. Just ripping up the signs. Vote Booker 2005.
That's pretty on the nose.
And one more memorable scene, a city police assault. The documentary filmmaker on a public sidewalk for filming Sharp.
Yeah.
Breaking the microphone off his camera in broad daylight in front of other journalists.
I'll give this to you. This is
something to behold.
Yeah, this is a good choice.
And it's, you know, it's small time, but it's big time. And as far as they're concerned, it's the biggest time. It's, you know, mayor of Newark. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
They got an
airport.
Newark's
a major city. Yeah, of course.
And it's really funny to see it's disturbing to an extent to see like the status quo and what people are used to and what people feel safe, even though he's not the right candidate, how hard it is. I mean, you look at it now, especially what Cory Booker's become. And it's like, there's not even a choice, you know, like one guy's like a thug essentially. And the other guy's for the people, even if he is a bit of a grandstander, grandstander.
Yeah, that'll work.
Grandstander is weird. One who grandstands now and pulls stunts. I'm going to release those emails. That really bugged me. Mm. But that's my number two. Sharp James. I wonder where Sharp James
is.
I should have looked up Sharp.
Is he alive?
He might be dead. He may be dead.
Come on, Sharp James. Let's see, look him up. I'll go to my number two. You ready for this?
Yeah, and then after your number two, I'll have an update on Sharp James. Sharp James.
Number two. International. Going international, Anderson.
All right.
Swedish Prime Minister Morten Lindstrom, played by Bjorn Floberg in Kingsman, Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad dude. Swedish Prime Minister Morten Lindstrom not only sells out his country and, by default, the entire world to Richmond Valentine and his evil plot to take over the world, he double-crosses his own country's princess and has her imprisoned when she dares to object to going along with Richmond Valentine. I remember having dinner with Richmond Valentine, and she's like, no, of course I'm not going along with this madness. And he's like, yeah, you can take her. He has her imprisoned. The princess, because of course, you know,
it's more of a dictator than a politician, right?
No, he's a prime minister. She's the princess. He's the prime minister. Like he's the prime minister to her queen. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's probably feeling the subtext is, I'm sure he's feeling a bit under her thumb as someone in a constitutional monarchy would. Yes.
Solid pick.
Right? Yeah. I mean, his crimes involve attempted murder of millions,
right?
Literally millions of people around the globe. So. Yeah, pretty bad.
But with that,
he's going to be one of the last surviving member people, handpicked by Richmond Valentine.
With that thought process, though, that brings me back to Dead Zone, where perhaps I should have had that be my number one, Martin Sheen, his aspirations to become president.
Yeah. Well, Morten Lindstrom, not a good guy.
Nuclear Holocaust was.
What about Slim James? Sharp James.
Sharp James still alive, as Wikipedia will have me believe, and. They say nothing.
Is that his real name?
Sharp James.
Is he born Sharp James?
He served 5 4-year terms, Newark mayor, before declining to run for re-election. He's 82 years old right now. He was born in Jacksonville, Florida. And they say nothing bad about him on the old Wikipedia.
Well, Sharp James with an E.
He served as state senator for the 29th Legislative District and was the 35th mayor of Newark.
Seems like a good fella.
He, you know what? He did what he had to do, which was the game plan and playing field at the time, I think.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, he had been through the 70s and the 80s, and those were just the tactics.
Yeah, he was just doing what he knew.
Speaking of New York and, like, old-timey and how things were, my number one, Brian.
Number one.
Here's a quote from my number one. Remember the first rule of politics, says Boss Tweed. The ballots don't make the results. The counters make the results. The counters keep counting. That's what he said when he did not like the results of a certain election. Talking about Boss Tweed, gangs in New York, 2002. The boss of Tammany Hall, the Democratic Party political machine that played a major role in the politics of 19th century New York City and state. William Boss Tweed, played by Jim Broadbent. Broadbent. Boss Tweed rose to prominence. I got a lot of fun facts.
I left him on my list because I thought you were doing
you ready to have a lot of fun facts? This is based on a real life, true life character. Some argue that he is the main antagonist in Gangs of New York. When you stand back and you take a look at the big picture. Especially the textbook that it was based on that I tried to read and it was too dense and boring for me, so I didn't.
Think about this. Yeah. Bill the Butcher. Bill
is
Cutting.
Employed.
He's kind of a low level, like local, like, you know, crime boss. Right. If you think about it, like it's really
and
Tweed who's the main villain.
And Bill Butcher, Bill Cutting, Poole, he ends up distancing himself from Boss Tweed because he can't stand the fact that he's so two-faced and so evil.
He's not principled.
He's like, you don't stand for anything. Because you just stand for yourself.
He loved Priest Valen, who he killed. That was an honorable man.
Boss Tweed rose to prominence as a foreman.
This is a great man.
This
is a great man.
Prominence as a foreman in the Big Six Volunteer Fire Company. His violent tactics and competitive nature caught the attention of the Democratic political machine. They nominated him to run for city alderman, and he was elected to his first political office at age just 28 years old, Brian. He opened a law office despite the fact that he had no training as a lawyer and collected thousands of dollars of payments for legal fees, which in reality were extortion payments for illegal services. So essentially laundering money there.
And extortion.
Stints as a congressman and senator with voter fraud and rigged elections running rampant. Tweed also elected many of his friends to influential positions, which is kind of par for the course, right, today.
Yep.
To enforce his rule, Tweed would use the muscle of dead rabbits and other gangs throughout the city. That's where New Amsterdam comes in. He was a long time dead rabbit and left and then came back. Dead rabbits are back.
Sure.
Or he's the dead rabbit that came
makes
back.
A fist.
Brad, stop. So terrible. He was brought down in large part by the expose by the New York Times and Harper's political cartoonist Thomas Nast. Who were investigating large-scale corruption among the city's political officials. Despite their efforts, they were largely unsuccessful until the election of 1871, when the public began to turn on Boss Tweed and the Tammany Hall machine in general. Here's real-life Tweed. Real-life Tweed was convicted, ultimately, for stealing an amount estimated by an alderman's committee in 1877 at between $25 million and $45 million.
That's a lot of money for
from New York City taxpayers. Yeah. My God, can you imagine what that is today through political corruption, although later estimates ranged it as high as $200 million.
Wow.
Unable to make bail, he escaped.
Who would have been one of the richest people on earth at that point? Off the books, of course.
Off the books, right. Yeah. Because you can't make that much money as a fake lawyer. You can't launder that.
That's right.
Unable to make bail, he escaped from jail once, but was returned to custody. He died in the Ludlow Street Jail. Oh. Boss Man Tweed. Ultimate corruption. Face of corruption. You know, it's a few generations are between us and him now, but he's still a man. Honestly, if it wasn't for gangs in New York, I probably wouldn't know Boss Tweed.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know William Tweed.
History defining political corruption.
So that's my number one. Boss Man Tweed. I appreciate you not having it on your list, knowing that I'd probably have it on mine, because I hate it when you have like my number one at your number four.
That's right. That's
it's upsetting
worst.
For a number of reasons.
Number one for me.
I'm surprised. I'm curious. What's your number one?
Well, I tell you this much: it's a movie that I don't think it's ever been mentioned on this show. I can't imagine a scenario.
Hmm.
1989.
White Fang.
There are no corrupt politicians in White Fang.
It might be.
I don't know it that well. 1989. I'm going international on this one. And this is the only one that's not an elected official.
Brian's very pleased with himself, everybody.
I'm so glad that we get to discuss this.
Okay, go ahead. What is it?
It's not an elected official. It's an appointed official.
Appointed. All right.
But definitely a political figure.
All right.
South African consul Arjun Rudd from Lethal Weapon 2. Diplomatic immunity. Do you remember that?
I have no recollection
of
any of this.
Have you seen Lethal Weapon 2?
I've never seen any
Choose your
Lethal Weapons.
You lie. You never seen the first one?
Lethal Weapon 3 is Leo Getz, right?
That's he comes around the second one.
I've seen all of them, yes. Okay. I have no memory.
You don't remember this? How
did you find this one? Did it just come to your mind because you remember this movie so well?
I was thinking about the one that came to my mind was the guy from Kingsman, the prime minister. And I'm like, oh, he was bad. He was like international, like bad dude. Like, oh no, the real guy that was bad was the guy played by Joss Ackland. It was South African. This was a very clever way for the filmmakers, Richard Donner, the director, to get evil white people in there, make them South African. That's right. Apartheid, South African. Mm-hmm. So Arjun Rudd and his South African crew are consulate. They're consul, international diplomats living in the United States, living in Los Angeles. And Murtaugh and Riggs, played by Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, they sort of stumble upon them in their investigation, right? Some crimes have been going on. And they try to arrest them, and they're like, no, you can't arrest us. We have diplomatic immunity. I'm like, what? Like, we can't be arrested. You can't arrest us on foreign soil. And they're like, and like, sorry, screw you. And so they go on carrying out all their crimes for the remainder of the movie. Mm-hmm. And diplomatic immunity is a thing. I heard a whole episode of Stuff You Should Know where they talked about diplomatic immunity.
I always heard that it wasn't a thing.
It is a thing. It's a thing with...
But murder's not on that
list. It actually is.
Like, no.
I don't think anyone's ever murdered and gotten away with it, but people have gotten away with it. There have been a few people. Granted, people, they will take away your ambassadorship.
Yeah, I think like if you got caught like, you know, speeding like over 100 miles an hour, they might
revoke it. That was actually a specific example they gave of like, really? No, people like, you know, break minor laws pretty frequently.
All right, where's the corruption?
I think there's
coming?
A guy that lives in Beverly Hills here that was on the news because, or... He was featured in the news because he would speed up and down the streets and all these neighbors can't do anything about it because he's some kind of diplomatic.
Yeah, he's an ambassador or a consulate.
What if he held like a woman down and like covered her mouth and tried to pull off her clothes?
I do believe there is a level at which to avoid an international incident, they would take away your ambassadorship. But for petty crimes, for things like speeding and parking it,
it's got to be just like misdemeanor. Parking it can't be felony. Felonies has to be can't do felonies.
But again, You would be out of a job pretty quick.
What is the government, what is Uncle Sam getting out of him that's worthy of allowing felonies
I guess to be perpetrated? The exchange of having ambassadors in that country, I guess. I don't know what the benefit
what
is.
What horrific ambassadors? Like, we'll send
Henderson, the point, it's kind of a self-policing thing where you would not do that because... To avoid international embarrassment, your country, right. Colombia or Iran or whatever,
but this
would take
did.
You out pretty quick.
But this guy did.
In the movie? Oh, yeah. Oh, he was involved in all sorts of bad stuff. And every time they tried to bust him, diplomatic immunity. And at the end...
I remember this now.
At the end, when he's got them on a ship at gunpoint, and Danny Glover raises his gun to like arrest him or shoot him, he just holds up his card. Diplomatic immunity! Mm-hmm. And Danny Glover?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know what? It's the end of the movie.
And he says, it's been revoked.
Uh-huh.
It's been revoked!
Yeah, that's not that great.
One of the great, great lines.
I saw this probably one time in theaters with my dad when I was a child.
It's just been revoked.
And not really buying that end line there, Brian.
His abuse of his power would be amongst the most egregious in recorded history.
All right.
If in fact it did happen in real life. But the diplomatic immunity is a real thing.
I do like the idea of somebody he just aspires or she aspires to get there and get that status and just to go fucking local.
Right. You know what I mean? That's the other thing is to be named ambassador, you have to be a person of some stance. Like a street thug would not
but somebody
be
who's got
appointed.
Their eye on the prize so yeah, far down the road
the
that
con,
they just yeah.
The real long con.
Oh, that's good. I like it. And then once again, they just brandish it everywhere.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. All right,
Logan, let's hit the listener top five.
Not my favorite top five we've ever done, but it's fun.
I got to yell diplomatic immunity several times.
I don't know why you're so excited
that
to
was,
do that.
That was fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
For you?
Diplomatic immunity. Logan, have you seen this?
What is that
too?
Accent?
Like South African.
No, I think I've only seen one in four.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds transformer. They
got pretty silly by the end.
I didn't see the fourth one. It sounds like you're a transformer. What do you say when you're a transformer? When you say you're like crowning yourself king?
Oh, Starscream?
Yeah.
What?
And your accent sounds the same.
What do I say?
But you have like a go-to accent. All right, let's hear from the listeners.
Diplomatic immunity.
All right, from the listeners, at number five, we have Bob Roberts.
Bob Roberts. Not that much corruption going on there from what my memory serves or my research. I wanted to have it on the list. I love that movie. Bob Roberts, an SNL character.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh,
a sketch
that
Tim Robbins did on SNL, and then he made a whole movie out of it. One of the only... mockumentaries that I actually recall liking a lot. Seen?
I don't know if I've seen Bob Roberts.
Bobby Roberts.
Street Fighting Roberts. Bob Roberts.
All right, guys. Sorry,
number four is Senator Palpatine from Star Wars 1-3.
He talked a lot and I was bored a lot.
Mm.
I think he was doing bad things.
He was doing bad things for the most part, yeah.
Number three, Senator Rourke from Sin City.
Oh, good. I had that on my also ran. I'm glad he's on there. Powers Booth. He's a bad dude.
Number two is... Greg Stilson from The Dead Zone.
Oh, good. I'm not crazy there.
We're talking.
And the number one corrupt politician, as voted on by our listeners, is Bo Tweed from Gangs of New York.
Boss Tweed.
Sorry.
That's upsetting.
Weird spell check.
It's upsetting that I don't have an original pick there. He is pretty obvious, but
he defines the corrupt politician.
The cartoons, the real life cartoons of him are a very fat, large man.
But hey, how could it be any other way? It has to be a fat man. You know, a fat cat.
The pork barrels.
All right, let's wrap up with some gambling, Logan.
Let's do it.
All right, last week you gambled on The House with a Clock in Its Wall. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes... I always have to read what the title is because I always forget. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score is 64%. Anderson bid 66% and Brian 59%.
Oh, wow.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomatoes score landed on 67%, making Anderson the winner.
Good for you. One up. How about that?
What was my pick?
You bet 66.
And so you're one off.
All right. You know what? I had a feeling I was going to win this week, and... you know what? It's time that we get back to what we do best, which is spoil movies. So I'm going to give you an easy one here, Brian. You've been fairly easy with me. You've moved off music docs, which I truly appreciate, and moved over to comedian documentaries the last couple weeks, which is a nice change of pace for me. Because I honestly don't care what people who write songs have
to
say. What
if I did a Weird Al Yankovic and then both met in the middle? Comedic and
music. I would hate that a lot.
Comedic and musical. Really?
So, yeah.
Well, let's see if it's a Weird Al documentary.
One of the most anticipated movies for me comes out this Thursday, limited. Old Man and the Gun. Old Man with a Gun. Old Man and the Gun.
I'm glad
the
Old Man and the Gun. I would not see this.
Really?
I don't remember much about it.
It's a movie.
Is this the Robert Redford one?
It's a Robert Redford movie. It's the last movie he's ever going to be in. Like, he's retiring, unless, you know, he's going to do one more tour like The Who does. But I don't think he will. And if you've seen it, trailer for it. It looks like a movie from the 70s, from the golden era, and it's directed by a man named David Lowery, who did a movie called Pete's Dragon. More importantly, he did Ain't Them Body Saints, but way more importantly than that, he did A Ghost Story. And this guy, David Lowery, he's got vision, and it looks like he wanted to make a movie that he wanted to see, would have liked to have seen. He's a young dude too, so, you know, the 70s are like before his time, but it's a movie he would have liked to have seen in created in the golden era, but it was not, so he's making it.
Okay. You could,
and Sissy Spacek's in there. It's got the stars of the 70s. It looks like it's from the 70s. It feels like it's from the 70s, based mostly on a true story is the tagline, something along those lines. And I have big hopes, high hopes for this movie. So
where can one see this?
I can't wait to talk about it with you next week. It comes out limited this Thursday.
I will absolutely see it if it's playing within 10 miles of my house.
Showtimes and tickets. Yeah, it's playing the Landmark.
Oh, beautiful.
It's playing at your house.
How fun.
Near your house. Shit, that means I have to go to the Landmark. Fuck.
Do you want
to
have a date? You want to meet up?
Every time I go there, I was there a couple nights ago to see Sisters Brothers, and I'm like, am I going to see Brian here?
I saw them setting up the costumes there. They have those displays.
They're already knocked over. One really? Of the costumes inside the little box is already knocked over. All right, let's gamble.
All right, this week you're gambling on Night School.
It looks really good.
Oh, you know what? I forgot this coming out this week. I switched my pick for you.
Too late. I've already bumped my tickets. Good Lord. It's a 90-minute movie. That's fantastic. Do you want to go see it?
Night School, it's just because of the political climate that we fucking live in. Like, I think critics are afraid to talk shit about movies with black people in them at times.
No.
I think they are.
You might be right. I was pretty amenable to that.
But, I mean, have you seen the trailer?
It looks really good. I laughed a lot. Do you want to go see Old Man and the Gun again?
No, I don't.
Let me know what time and what seat.
I'm picturing, you know what I'm picturing right now? I'm picturing a very skinny little white man with glasses. Taking notes while watching Night School.
Is that me?
And he's skinny. And his eyes are going. His eyes are going back and forth as he's writing his notes, and he's nervous, and he's looking over his shoulder.
To see if we're there.
To see if anyone's there that might get upset with his review when it's bad.
Oh,
see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
That's what I picture. Yet my number is still. Do you have your number?
No, not at all.
Do it.
What's the movie?
We're doing Night School.
This looks really good.
Kevin Hart, who's not been in anything since about a week ago.
What's your number?
31.
39?
It's too high, I think. It might be.
They're really promoting this a lot, which is always a good sign.
Right. Well, currently the week before its release, there is no Rotten Tomato score for Night School.
That's a great sign. That's
zero reviews.
Come on.
What it is? What it is? You know, she's funny, he's funny. It's a light little romp. I'm going to give it a thumbs up. Oh, if you fuckers do that. You know we all know what this is.
Hey, come on, white guilt. Come through for me.
The fact that this movie is actually, like, every time the trailer comes on, like,
39.
I'll be doing something else, and I'll be in the kitchen, and the movie, the TV spot will come on, and I'll come into the living room and yell at my wife and my child, startle Atticus. I'll be like, how is that a movie? How is it a movie?
Do you want to see it?
They have the giant, like, in the big multiplexes out here, they have the giant, like, cardboard cutout of, like, him in the locker, like, yeah, I'm getting bullied by my hot female teacher who farts in my face in the boxing ring. She talks about science and molecules and farts in my face. It's really funny.
Actually, it's kind of sold me on it. You want to go see it?
I won't be shocked if you come in here and FlickFest it next week.
Stop it.
It's a fucking, it's like the ultimate Frank movie.
Should I see this?
Or if there's a Frank.
Should I see, what did you see?
A Frank award, this would win it. It's different than Rossi.
These are the Sisters Brothers.
Sisters Brothers. I mean, I've already been down that road. All right, you get to see a horse on fire, Sisters Brothers. An image I can't shake from my head.
I have it on good authority. There's a horse on fire.
That's the problem with Sisters Brothers. Is like you right off the bat, you hate Joaquin Phoenix if you care about animals at all, because in the very opening sequence, he's like, "They're just horses. Leave them burn." And John C. Reilly's in there like trying to save him. He's like, "I don't want to walk home, and I want to save these horses." And Joaquin Phoenix is like, "They're just horses. Let them go. Who cares? They're burning to death.
He doesn't sound like a very good guy."
No, like right off the bat, you're not supposed to like him, but you're not supposed to hate him either, you know?
Thanks to Juan M. for the artwork this... Oh, wow, what that is. Oh, is that... Oh, are you short round? Well, you should be very upset about that.
Yeah, was that... That was actually a Halloween costume a few years ago.
No.
What's wrong with short round? He saves the day in that movie.
Short round is a very offensive
Saves
character.
Indy.
He's a very offensive
are you
character.
Are you still wearing the costume?
Oh, am I? Oh, yeah, kind of.
All right, let's get out of here.
Wow, that's pretty well done. Thanks, Juan. Check it out, andersonandbrian.com. You can also check it out at Twitter and Facebook. Twitter at The Film Vault. The Film Vault on Facebook. Thanks to Future Idiots, 6C, Janice414, The MTET, Scissors Cut Your Pictures, and 1985 for being our featured artist this week. Thanks for the tunes, guys and gals. Subscribe on Patreon. Guys, this month, a new episode drops on Patreon exclusively. Fun facts about iconic characters.
Oh, I think this is my favorite one that we've done so far.
Really?
Even though we haven't done it. But let's get drunk and do it right now, yeah?
Sure.
Let's do that.
Why not? Check us out there on Patreon. If you don't mind, it's $5 a month. It doesn't cost very much, and it helps us out quite a bit. And until next time.
Go over to AndersonCowan.com and get your tickets. Come out and see me. Let's party. Let's have a good time. And we do it for Van Gogh.